It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. A couple of quick notes. Two things that struck me this morning. This is hot off the press. So I'm getting out of my car here at KAXE, and I'm listening to the radio as I drive into town, and I hear my daily phenology report, which was recorded sometime in the past and played for today, and it spoke of the blue-eyed grass. And today was the first day in 1988 that I actually discovered blue-eyed grass. And yesterday I found blue-eyed grass blooming for the first time. And if you are out, if you listen to the Daily Dose of Phenology, you'll understand that they're not easy to find. But when you do find them, they are absolutely startling. They have, well, they have three sepals and three petals, but all six of them are indigo blue, almost purplish blue, really, really dark. And then the center of the flower is bright yellow, absolutely just absolutely bright lemon yellow, and they are absolutely worth the digging. And they grow, oddly enough, I find them in that gravelly edge of the roadways, and sometimes I'll be on a blacktop road and I'll see them right there on the gravelly edge, and sometimes, like yesterday, I'm walking along a gravel road and there they are, right there in the edge of the, on the verge. And for all of their growth, they look a lot like a blade of grass. They're not a grass, obviously, but they look like a blade of grass, and they're called blue-eyed grass, and they are very, very beautiful and worth seeking out. So if you have a just any old grassy patch along the edge of a road in that gravelly verge, that's where you're likely to find them. The second thing that happened this morning as I was getting out of my car was I heard geese calling, and I thought to myself, about time for the molt migration. And I looked up, and a flock of about 75 geese were headed north. And Ed Dallas called from Deerwood this morning and said that he had seen four different flocks yesterday doing the same thing. And Mike Zekas from Bemidji was one of the earliest researchers on this subject. And it turns out that the geese that are either unsuccessful at nesting or unmated fly into Canada from Minnesota and Wisconsin and other places. And they fly into Canada and they find a remote lake where they can go through their eclipse molt. And ducks and geese, when they molt all of their feathers at once and start over. And so that there is a period of time where they are flightless. And because they're flightless, they're at greater risk. So they go to remote areas in Canada and they find a quiet spot where they can go through this flightless period where they feel relatively safe. And what we notice here is these large flocks. This morning there had to be 75 geese in the flock I saw, and they were headed north. Now they're going to filter back into northern Minnesota as they choose after they've gone through their molt. And once they are flighted again, they will then kind of drift around and work their way back into Minnesota. And once again, we'll see a lot more geese in the area. So that those two things are happening absolutely right now. And the thing that stopped me yesterday and made me see the blue-eyed grass was driving in my road, and on my road there are some large hay fields, and the hay fields are pretty well maintained and hayed every year. But right now, this time of year, and every year about this time, a plant called sheep sorrel begins to bloom. And it forms these, because it grows rhizotomously, that is, it grows from roots and spreads, it forms sort of circular patterns in the hayfield. And you've got this broad expanse of green. If you're driving by a hayfield today, you probably can look at it and see this. You'll see this broad expanse of green punctuated by these bright red scabs. And that's what they remind me of. They're like these big scabs of red that are on these fields of green. And that red is the sheep sorrel. And it's pretty apparent out there. If you get out there and drive by a hayfield, you'll see it pretty easily. The other events this past week, let's see. I saw the first blue bead lily. I saw the first Canada columbine. The columbine is that red flower that, in my youth, and I'm sure in your youth, you probably were introduced to it as honeysuckle, because it had the little five little packages of nectar at the top of those long, tall stalks. Well, it's actually columbine, Canada columbine, and it is a favorite food of hummingbirds, because they're the only ones who can actually access those little pockets of sugar, the nectar at the top of those little tubes. And the flower is uniquely designed for that. So the hummingbird comes in and she's below the flower and she's hovering there and she's got her beak poked up that long stalk, and then she runs her little feathery tongue up there. Her tongue is actually, it's two pieces and filled with fine hairs, and she can kind of stick it in there, and it acts like a little trough, and the hairs kind of help the nectar stick to it, and so they're able to drink that nectar. Well, while she is doing that, if you look at a columbine, you'll see that there are the outside of the flower is red, and then there's a sort of a yellow inner flower, and hanging down from that are all of the little stamens that have the pollen on them. And then if you look carefully, you'll see below the stamens, sticking out right below the stamens, is a long, mostly whitish-looking object that is the stigma, and that is where the female part is. And so the hummingbird comes in there, and she's hovering, and she's got her beak up in the flower, and she's drinking the nectar. And while she's doing that, the plant is busy putting a layer of pollen on her throat. And she's not even aware that it's happening, because she's drinking the nectar. And when she flies from that flower to the next one, she takes the pollen with her. And if the stigma on the next flower is ready, it will intercept that pollen, take it, and you'll have fertilization. And once the columbine fertilizes, it turns upright. So it's going to be, right now, the flower is hanging down. It's upside down, if you will. And when it becomes pollinated, it'll turn itself right side up. And then you'll get a crisp little pod of five little chambers that will be full of seeds of more Canada columbine. Water arum is blooming. This is the relative of the calla lily. It's sometimes called wild calla. Calla palustris is its scientific name. Grows in water. Obviously, it belongs to the same family as the Jack in the Pulpit. It has a great big white leaf called a spathe. And the spathe is a modified leaf that just attracts insects to the spadix, which is the flower. And on the arum, the spadix is just this tall stalk, looks like like the rounded off end of a stubby pencil. And it's covered with the white flowers with little green parts on them. And those flowers are, there are numerous flowers on each of those water arums. So driving between here and Bemidji, you can't miss them. They're blooming in the ditches all the way along the way there. You can't hardly miss them. And I would suspect that if you drive by any swamp that has a little bit of a moat or a little bit of open water, around that open water, you're going to find water arum. Wintercress, still blooming. I saw my first smooth rose on the 1st of June. You heard the kids from North Shore Community School say that they saw their first wild rose on the 31st of May, and I saw my first one on the 1st of June. Sarsaparilla is blooming. Pale pea, this is one of the vetches. It's got a white pea-like flower, cream-colored pea-like flower. That is blooming right now. First flowers on that one, June 1st. Highbush cranberry, we talked a little bit about that earlier today. That is the bush that is blooming. It's a shrub. It's the one here must be 10 feet tall. big 4-inch discs of white flowers. If you look carefully at those white flowers, you'll see that on the outside of the ring of flowers are 4-petaled large flowers, probably 3/4 of an inch across. Those flowers are sterile, and their only purpose is to help attract insects to the smaller inner flowers where the fertile flowers are and where the actual fertilization and seeds will come. Round-leaf dogwood is blooming in the forests, so you're going to see a lot of big discs of white flowers around. Some of them are round-leaf dogwood, some are nannyberry, some are downy arrowwood, some are the highbush cranberries, and they're all blooming just about now. Tussock cottongrass, if you're driving by a bog, one of those highly acidic places, if you're driving by a bog, you're going to see these cottony structures. They're white, and they look like cotton, and they're going to grow in kind of clumps, and that is tussock cottongrass, and you're looking at the seed stage of that. Those are not the flowers. Those are the seeds, and the tussock cottongrass is seeding but not yet dispersing its cotton. This past week, the willows were really throwing cotton, and there was a lot of cotton floating around all over the area, and that was mostly willow from the shrub willows. The pink moccasin flowers are in bloom, so are the yellow moccasin flowers, also the calypso orchids, and the ram's head orchids are blooming. So if you know where some are, you should get out there and check them out. And in the bogs, the small cranberry is blooming, and it is just gorgeous. This has a kind of a recurved flower on it. It's a pink flower on a beautiful laying on a mat of green sphagnum. It is really quite pretty. Mountain maple is first flower this week. Lab tea is at its peak of flower. A little flower that I call polygala is blooming. Flowering wintergreen is another name for it. It's got a couple of big magenta-shaped ears and a long snout with a fringe at the end, and that plant is in bloom right now. Bunchberry began to bloom this past week, and I saw my first painted turtles coming out to lay eggs this past week. The cooler weather kind of slowed them down, but I expect that today and tomorrow and the next day the turtles are really going to start moving. So if you're driving around out there, avoid the turtles, for crying out loud. What could be easier than missing a turtle? They aren't dashing across the road like some stupid squirrel. They're moving rather deliberately across the road, so avoid them. And if you decide you want to help a turtle, when you pick it up, take it in the direction that it is moving. Now, when you pick it up, it's going to void its water. Now, that water is necessary for laying eggs, and so it's going to have to resupply itself with water. And if the only source of water is back where it came from, after you pick it up, it's going to have to turn around and go back and resupply itself with water before it can go out and lay its eggs. So if you don't have to pick them up, leave them alone, because you just are going to make life tougher for them. But if there's water on both sides of the road, you can pick it up and get it over the road and put it down, and it'll be able to get the water that it needs to carry on. So by all means, avoid those turtles. Yeah. Otherwise, Blast will be out after you, and you don't want that to happen. A blast from the past. The bureaucracy lamenting all those smashed turtles. Don't become their enemy. Not a place you want to find yourself. That's the Phenology Show for this week. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk again next week.